Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 136 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where we come together to talk about games, God, and the wonderful things that happen when the two intersect. Well, normally we are doing that, but we had a bit of a wrinkle in the podcasting plans. I will not be naming any names here, but somebody had a technical malfunction that rendered their audio completely unusable. All of it. Just gone. They discovered this the night I'm supposed to be editing and posting the new episode. So instead of hearing from me, Jeff, and Daniel, you're just going to be hearing from me this episode. Now, traditionally, this is where I'd post the bonus content intro music and kindly tell you about the situation we found ourselves in, play the super special guest content we have, and basically give you a little bit of commentary from me, but not much else. I'd say, sorry for the mix-up, we'll come back next week with a full episode. However, there is so much to talk about in Inroads news and gaming news, as well as the super special guest content that I just mentioned, that I'm going to try and do my best to make this as close to the normal format as possible and keep GSP 136 rolling as scheduled. At worst, if this really isn't your thing and this special snowflake episode kind of doesn't work, you can always come back in 2 weeks when Jeff and Daniel return to help me talk about gaming and ministry and how much we love this stuff. Now that I've got that lengthy intro and explanation out of the way, let's keep to the usual format and talk about what we've been playing. At the start of episode 135, Daniel and I were complaining about how neither of us had gotten a chance to really play much of anything. Part of the reason for that is that I didn't have any time to play anything because I was anticipating the start of the regularly occurring game day that we were starting in partnership with a local church. It's actually my home church. That has now happened, and I'm here to tell you the results. The event was pretty much exactly what I expected for a first event, you know, seeing as it was an area that isn't really well known for gaming. There are a couple gaming stores, but nothing really big. So we had about 7 people come out to play, and I did kind of hope for more. I was hoping to see more of a community presence, more people from the church, but I am happy to say that those 7 people were super happy and super excited about the time we were playing. We played about 4 hours, and really about 5 or 10 minutes before we were ready to close up shop and shut everything down, several of them kind of turned around, looked at the clock, and said, "Holy crap, it's already 6 o'clock. So, personally, I'm going to call that a win, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next month and future months as we keep that rolling. I didn't bring the entirety of the Inroads Traveling Library to this one because it's only a 4-hour event and I didn't know how many people were coming. But apparently I must have done all right selecting what people wanted to play. We ended up playing a handful of different games across the 4 hours. We played several games of Boss Monster. It's a NES art style card game where each person is playing as the, well, boss monster of a dungeon, and you're trying to build your dungeon so that it's really enticing for heroes to want to try and break in and steal your stuff, but you're basically leading them to their own demise. That was a ton of fun. Lots of people like Boss Monster, and I actually know that at least one person who came to the event has since picked up their own copy of Boss Monster, so that's a win right there. We also played some Cash and Guns, which is always a game night favorite for me, especially because you can get about 8 people to the table playing this game, and it is absolutely ludicrous because you're pointing foam guns at each other and basically trying to intimidate everyone to step away and let you take all the booty from the bank job you just pulled. So how could that go wrong? And we did play several games of Codenames, pretty much because Codenames. I'm beginning to believe it's almost impossible to not play that game at our events. I think my favorite part of the night was when one of the people who were playing looked at me and said, "Finally, one of your games that I can understand." I had this cool moment where I could tell her that there are probably more out there. She just hadn't seen them yet. She could come back and I'd be happy to show her more of them. There was also a less cool moment when I realized that the first of my games that she actually understood involved pointing guns at people, intimidating them into submission, and I'm also going to note the fact that she was one of the few people playing who actively looked to eliminate other players. Just a sec. I think I need to make a phone call. Okay, so in all seriousness, we had a ton of fun. I'm super looking forward to that growing and continuing. But that wasn't the end of it. I ended up having a cool moment the next day. I found myself at the same church. It's not surprising because it was at my home church. That's where I normally go. However, the way that Sunday played out was not even kind of usual. If you go to the En-ROADS Ministry site, you'll actually find an article that I put up in the Theology of Play section called Onitama in the Lobby. In that article, I pretty much describe the process, the stuff that was going on in my head as I'm sitting there playing, and really how God spoke to me there. It goes into much more detail in the article, so I'm going to recommend that you check that out. However, in case you don't have the time to go read that article, I'll give you a summary. Suze and I basically got to church really early than usual, and we kind of had this feeling like God was going to do something, but we really had no concept of what that was, so we just kind of made it possible for anything to happen to happen. So we both took separate cars, we were both ready to do whatever. We got there, and we got there so early that the first service was still going, the sermon was just happening when we got there, and we ended up just talking to people. I ended up cracking open my Bible and just reading through some stuff. And it was really cool. It was good. Suze actually had a conversation with somebody that really got her empowered and psyched to do something that she needed to get done. So she ended up leaving early, and I stayed, but I didn't end up going into the service. Instead, I ended up hanging out in the lobby and setting up a game of Onitama, which was still in my car. We've mentioned Onitama before on the podcast, I'm pretty confident. It's a two-player abstract game, kind of like chess, but with way fewer pieces. Everybody has four monks and one master, and you basically move them across the board using moves that are on cards. Instead of having each piece have their own style of movement, the movements are on the cards, and your goal is to either eliminate the other player's master or get your master from your side of the board to the temple on the other side of the board. It's a really fun and simple game. And for some reason, I just really felt like I needed to be playing it. There, in the lobby. Not being in the service. And it seems like it would be such a weird, not according to God's plan kind of thing to do. But it really did lead to this really cool moment where God pretty much reinvigorated in me this desire to drive outreach and ministry in this understanding of invitation and demonstration, both as far as gaming ministry and En-ROADS itself, but even just how we see God. You know, so much of the way we interact with people and the way we want to get them to meet God and to see God is by just hammering, you know, something that's good, I'm not going to lie, it's great to get the gospel out there and to see it preached, but so much we want to just hammer that and get the point and get to the message. And the way I've seen it in the gospels and the way that has often most powerfully spoken to me is when somebody demonstrates a life that is obviously changed by Christ. When I see the Holy Spirit just working through somebody and know that it's real, it's not just lip service. And when that person looks at me and says, you know, hey, do you want to come and see what God has for your life? Then yeah, I want to. I spent so much of my youth seeing people tell me how much God loves me and then demonstrate a life that shows nothing about the influence of God. And here I was just playing games with people, playing games with little kids that are, you know, surrounded and having cool conversations with people about the nature of gaming and why it's powerful in ministry. Just because I set up in the lobby. I didn't force anybody to come. I wasn't even bringing people to me. I just started playing by myself and God used it to do something really cool. So definitely check out the article on the site for more and more directed stuff about that. But it was a really cool experience, and I'm glad I got to do it. So here I am, alone on the mics, talking out into the airwaves, and I got some things to share with you. So I'm going to dig into my Fallout 3 experience and channel the spirit of Three Dog, the best DJ the Capital Wasteland has ever known. Here we go. And now, the news! Man, that felt good. I really got to reinstall that game. As is our wont, when there's cool stuff going on at the Inroads Ministries camp and great stuff going on in gaming in general, we do like to take some time to talk about that news and let you folks know what's going on and even get you thinking about your response to it. Today is absolutely no exception. For starters, our GM in residence and usual co-host here on GSP, Jeff Romo, recently wrapped up the last of his summer one-shots games. You may have seen some summary stuff on our YouTube channel, or definitely seen him posting a bunch of different stuff in the tavern. But the short version is that this program was a rousing success. It was Jeff's baby, Jeff's brainchild, and I hope he knows what he's gotten himself into, because I'm pretty confident that people are going to want him to do this again next year. So I hope he's really got some stuff brewing, because he's definitely going to come back. This is not the last time you're going to hear about Jeff's summer one-shots. Jeff has been thinking really hard about these games, what they meant, and how cool it was to play them. He's going to actually end up doing a write-up reflecting on the whole experience to be, you know, just part of what we do on the site, just an article about the experience. So definitely be watching out for that. I know he and I have been talking a lot off mic about some of the things that he's been thinking through as he's thought about putting this article together. So lots of stuff about the way he sees community and ministry and what we do here at Inroads. So as soon as he gets that put together and posted, we'll be sure to let you know. You're going to want to read it. Sticking with RPGs for a minute, we recently finished up our Victoriana campaign. You're going to be seeing the final bits of that on our channel. And I'm hoping, we haven't gotten it on film yet, but I hope we're going to get to do an epilogue post where we get everybody back to talk about some of the stuff that didn't show up, you know, on camera about our characters. But you'll be seeing all that stuff on the channel. And while playing Dov Poltsen, the illustrious Russian bear, has been a ton of fun, we're going to switch gears a little bit and give Jeff a little bit of breathing room for the next game that we play. He's going to be stepping down from the GM seat, and I have to say that I'm very nervous about this because that is a big seat to fill. Jeff does such an amazing job, and I hope that as I am looking to run Numenera, I hope that I can even be a shadow of how good he is at setting up scenes. I'm sure if you're any kind of regular listener to this program, you'll have heard me talk about the Cypher system and Numenera specifically and how much I absolutely love this system. It's probably my favorite role-playing system out there right now. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it here because you've probably already heard it. But in case you're new and you don't know anything of what I'm talking about, don't worry, because in the very near future, hopefully, Lord willing, in the next couple days, you're going to see a video that I'm going to post on our channel, either one video or two, talking about an introduction of me as a GM and how my style differs from Jeff's, and also a breakdown of not everything about the Cypher system, but kind of the overview of the world of Numenera and how the Cypher system works. I tend to be a very free-flowing kind of, I don't want to say improv GM because I do a lot of planning, but I tend to be more open, and so you're going to see a lot of very interesting things in this system. I'm definitely looking forward to it. We're calling this series Numenera Rebirth. That will make a lot more sense as I start to preview the series, and you're going to see what's happening, but I'm just going to put it out there. As of now, we have added a couple new characters to the roster, but there is still room. If you want to get in on this game, please get in touch with me as soon as possible. There is space available, but I want to make sure that you know, we get time to set up and really get the characters together and that they gel. So let me know if you're interested. We are going to be running on East Coast time this time. It'll probably be late in the evening. If that doesn't fly with you, I hope that we'll be able to work something out. I will keep you posted on that. And hopefully before too much longer, you'll be able to see a video with episode zero. I'll probably do a character creation, character breakdown episode with the crew that eventually comes together. For the last of the inroads related news, it's officially fall. That means pumpkin spice everything. I can bust my hoodies out of hibernation, and Extra Life is on again. This year will be the fourth year that Inroads has fielded a team to raise money for Children's Specialized Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And to date, we have raised just shy of $4,300. And that every time I see that number, it gets me so just pumped because it's been so cool to raise money for this hospital. This year's team goal is currently set at $2,000. We were so close to hitting it last year. We were literally like $60, I want to say, shy of getting $2,000 last year. And I really want to break that. I really want to push forward and really get that, just crush it. Part of the way that we can do that is to get more team members who are all raising money, so each one of us doesn't have to raise as much to meet that goal. If you'd like to join us at our local event, you are more than welcome to. You can sign up at the team page and contact me for more information on that. However, even if you are nowhere near the Central New Jersey area and you want to be a part of this, just join the team. Last year, we had people running local events at wherever they were. We had people streaming video games who couldn't make it, who couldn't run board games, so they were streaming video games. No matter where you are, you can participate as part of the Inroads team. You do not have to be here to do that because all the donations and everything goes through the Extra Life website. So you can literally be anywhere and still participate, still be part of the regulars' efforts to raise money for this hospital. It's super great that we get to do this. We actually had Katie, one of our longtime team members, go and visit them last year to hear about what they do. And it's really cool to raise money for these guys because these kids are in long-term care. And a lot of times that means they're there for days, weeks, or even months in the hospital. And the fact that we get to help them cover some of the cost of that and to know and to have them know that there are people out there who support them, that's huge. And I love the fact that we're going to be able to do that again this year, and I really hope that you'll consider being a part of it. That may have been the last of the Inroads news, but you probably know by now, since there's kind of been no way to avoid it if you listen to board game podcasts or go to YouTube to watch board game content at all, the folks at Riot Games, makers of the video game League of Legends, have thrown their hat into the board game arena with a title called Mechs vs. Minions. Here's the short version of what the game is like. You play as one of four heroes from the League of Legends cast, piloting your mech to accomplish certain goals against minions, waves and waves of minions, to just do various things depending on what mission you're on. One of the options that they give in a lot of the preview stuff is moving a bomb from one side of the board to the other without having it blow up in your face. The way this is accomplished is by doing kind of a programmed movement mechanic where you basically use movement, turning, and attacking cards to program what you're going to do and how you're going to move across the board. There's a lot of cool mechanics going on here. Like, there's different types of cards and you can play the same type of card on the same spot in your programming track and upgrade it to make it bigger and badder. You can scrap actions by playing cards that are of different types. There's just a lot of cool ways that you can change and manipulate the program that you're trying to get your guys to do. As is always the case when you're dealing with programmed actions, there are plenty of things that can just straight up ruin your day. One of the things that's mentioned in a lot of stuff is sometimes you can get damage which causes your mech to glitch, and it causes you to do things like turn when you don't want to, or move when you don't want to, or even switch the order of the cards that you have in your program. So lots of room for bad stuff to happen. However, some of the things that really frustrate people about programmed games like this aren't really a thing here. Like, one of the things that I've heard mentioned is that there's no such thing as friendly fire. So there's no chance that you're going to turn because you glitched and shoot your buddy in the face. Like, that just won't happen. So that's something that I kind of like about this, because I like the craziness of programmed movement, but sometimes it just gets really frustrating. I like a little bit of frustration. I can deal with that and lead to crazy events, but if it's all frustration, that just bothers me. If you want a deeper explanation about the game, what it's about, and how the rules play, there's a lot of places you can go to. The internet just exploded with news about this game. You can check out Rodney over at Watch It Played, who does a full rules breakdown, and I think he's just recently started putting up videos kind of breaking down mission by mission, so there's a lot of cool information there. You can go to Rolling Dice and Taking Names or The Secret Cabal. Both podcasts have interviews with some of the people behind this game, and those podcasts gave me just a lot of excitement about this game for a couple different reasons. Hearing these guys talk about this game, one, you can tell they care about this game. Like, they really want it to be amazing. They're not, you know, every time you get a big company doing something, everyone's going to start yelling about sellout and trying to just throw money at a thing to, you know, to make more money. These guys very obviously care about this game. Also, one thing that I like is that they are very player-centered. They care about the player experience. They've done a lot of playtesting, and the way they're handling the business stuff of this too, which I'll talk more about in a second, it really shows that they care about the people playing it. And anytime you get somebody who is passionate about the game and passionate about the people playing it, that's just a winning combination. So I'm super excited about the potential on this. There's a lot of cool things to get excited about just in the way this game is packaged and marketed. The cool thing is that there is a ton of gorgeousness in this box. The four different heroes that you can play with, their figures are, one, really well sculpted, and two, they are pre-painted, which is something that's almost unheard of these days. Even the minions, and there are so many minions, of course, it's a League game. There are so many minions, but even all of them are, you know, they have a wash, which is a term that I've just started learning because I don't paint minis, but I've been learning this. Basically, if you're like me and don't do this as part of your hobby, a wash is the kind of thing that gets into all the crevices and details of a miniature and really make those details pop. I've seen figures without a wash and after a wash, and you can definitely tell the difference. Everything just looks cleaner and better, and you can see things that you wouldn't if you didn't have that. Normally, it's something that, you know, people just kind of do afterwards, but this company has straight up said, you know, even despite the fact that there are so many of them, they're like, no, we really want to take pride in the work that these sculptors have done to make these miniatures awesome, so we're going to give them a wash. It's so good. The pictures that are out there, the internet is covered with them. Check these out because they look absolutely gorgeous. Likewise, the boards that come with the game are really well done. They're really solid. The tokens, they have these amazing metal tokens. There is no cardboard in this. It is metal tokens, and they all look cool. They feel weighty. The gameplay looks like a ton of fun. And just like a League game, like, the basic concept is pretty reasonably approachable, but also inspired by League, to be good at it requires a certain level of mastery and really getting in there and learning how to make these moves happen. So I really think that there's a place for this game, both with, you know, random, you know, people who are like, hey, I just want to have some silly fun, and people who really want to nail the mechanics and really delve into the challenge of a game. There are a number of other reasons why this is on my radar, not just because it looks fun, though that's obviously going to put things a little higher up on the list. We're all about table presence at Inroads because, you know, when we run an event, there are people who know nothing about this type of gaming, and if you have something that is sitting on a table and looks gorgeous and is eye-catching, then it's going to draw people in. It's going to have them asking, what game is this and can I play and what's going on? So the fact that these miniatures are pre-painted and washed and all that, that the tokens look cool, that it sits on the table very well, clearly that's going to raise it up in what we're doing. Also, it's League of Legends. If you're not much of a video gamer, you might not have heard of it, but League of Legends is huge. It has a global community. The game itself brings in about $1.6 billion a year. That's right, billion with a B. The player count is enormous, and even if you've never heard about it, the likelihood that someone you know has, or is even playing it themselves, is pretty high. There was a time when I tried my hand at League, and I was terrible at it, but it was fun. I'm happy to see that some of my favorite characters from the world, even if I didn't necessarily like them in the game, I just love the design and the just everything about the character, made the hero list for this game. Corki, Heimerdinger, Rumble, and Tristana are the people who are your mech pilots. And if you know League, those names are probably familiar to you. Seeing them in the full color minis on the table draws some attention, especially if you're playing with people who know how to play League and who are a part of League. They're gonna identify these characters real easy. And to just, you know, be able to make that connection is just another reason why this definitely is on my radar. I'm also intrigued by the way they are handling the business aspect of this game. Riot has so much capital to throw around that they're doing stuff that a lot of other companies can't pull off. Like, everyone who's seen these components is talking about the fact that this game would easily retail over $100 for any other company. But Riot's able to put so much into this and put so much capital into the production that they're only selling it for $75. And again, if you look at any of these pictures, that seems ludicrous because there's so much in this. Part of this is because you're not going to be able to find this in stores. You're not going to be able to find it on Amazon. You're not going to be able to find it at your online gaming stores. You're not going to find it at your local brick and mortar shops. You're only going to be able to get this if you order it directly through Riot. So they're able to keep costs low because they're handling everything in-house. And the other cool thing is that because, again, they have so much capital, they have so much money available to them and resources available to them, the first print run of this game is a downright ludicrous 30,000 units. So you're probably not as popular as it's probably going to be. The likelihood that you're going to have to rush to get them before it's out of print is not high. I just hope they're ready for it, because I think this is going to be a very popular title. All right, finally done with the news, and now we get to do what I've been waiting to do pretty much since the beginning of this year. It was then that I was directed to a thread on Board Game Geek about a man living in Berlin who was using board games as part of an intentional ministry to connect with Syrian refugees that had come into the area. So naturally, when I saw this, I knew that we had to talk with him. So I contacted Jeffrey Ahlers to get him on the show, but to say the least, scheduling was tricky. As is demonstrated by this episode that I'm currently recording, sometimes it's hard just to get the three hosts of this show on at the same time. We're crossing three different states, multiple time zones. It doesn't always work. So trying to connect the three of us to a man on the other side of an ocean would be difficult at best. But as you'll soon see, Jeffrey has a lot on his plate. So after some discussion about how we can make it work and a lot of scheduling, you know, stuff that got in the way, he suggested we just send him questions. He'd record his responses, and we could use them like that. So technically this is an interview, but it's a weird kind of interview that's not like normal ones. So in other words, it's kind of going exactly how the rest of this episode is. It still took us quite a while to get everything together because, again, dude has a lot on his plate. But we were willing to wait on his timeline to get him to give us the responses to our questions because We are really excited about the work that he's doing, and we want you guys to know about what he's doing. So we were willing to wait as long as we needed to make this happen. Originally, when dealing with the responses that he gave us to this question, we had Daniel and Jeff, and all three of us were talking and kind of bantering about what Jeffrey was sending to us. But sadly, all of that got lost in the technical morass. However, I still have all of Jeffrey's responses, and I hope that I'll be able to provide some insightful commentary. I hope it's insightful anyway. And kind of give you my thoughts on what he said in response to our questions. The first question we asked him was, we just wanted to get a little bit of background. He wasn't born in Berlin. He moved there with his family. So we wanted to get a little bit of background on how he got there and how he started working with the refugees.
Well, I grew up in Iowa, and which was a great place to grow up, but it also kind of fostered a restlessness inside me of wanting to kind of get out and see the world, since in Iowa, you're pretty much far away from everything. I had a real strong interest in Europe, and when the wall came down, the Berlin Wall came down when I was in college, my sister also did a summer exchange program and got to know some Germans, and I got to know that German family through her. And so that really sort of set the direction then for me to try living in Germany after I graduated from college, and I studied architecture. So I was very interested in Berlin and its history, its architectural history, and of course the rebuilding of the city now that the wall had come down. So it was a very exciting time to come to Berlin as an architect. Just a few years after the wall came down, the city was a huge construction site. Everything, there were at one construction site in particular where the wall used to be, right in the middle of the city, prime real estate, there were 60 cranes, 60 huge construction cranes, working on over 20 huge buildings. So it was just, it was an amazing time to be there and fun to be a part of that, in the different firms that I worked for during those years. It was during that time then that I was also kind of spiritually seeking. I had left the church, become a practical atheist, and was, but still kind of searching for the meaning of life, looking at different things. Berlin was a great place to explore different things because anything goes in Berlin, and it's a very diverse city. So, you can find just about anything, any kind of worldview, any kind of belief system. And, eventually, found a German evangelical church, actually, that was very welcoming, very community-oriented, and they just welcomed me. They welcomed skeptics. They welcomed people who had questions. They didn't judge me for not accepting everything at face value, and that's what really appealed to me at that time, and that's what I try to do now. In the churches that I work with, is to try to foster that same openness to anybody who comes through the door. And so that was very important for me to be able to have a safe place to really discuss, to argue, to debate, and it eventually led me back into a relationship with God and with Jesus. And not only that, but it really encouraged me to want to give back and especially to work with young people. I had already developed a rapport with a lot of the high school students that were at the church, the Germans. Of course, I was only 26 years old at the time, too, so I wasn't a whole lot older than they were. But then they asked me if I wanted to help lead their youth group. And so I started doing that, and then I met a Presbyterian pastor, a German-American, who was there with a German-American church partnership. And he kind of took me under his wing, and he became a mentor to me and a good friend. And he took me out to this place called Matsan, which was, kind of what we would call inner city, you know, housing projects in East Berlin. And it was there, we were helping another team of people out there that were reaching out to youth, for the church. And we started to have a vision for actually starting a youth church, a church that was really oriented towards the youth out there. And that's where I felt, God was calling me to work full time. I was kind of frustrated because, you know, architecture is not always just a 9-to-5 job. You're working late nights sometimes on projects. And so a lot of times I had to cancel out on things that I had planned to do with the youth. And so I really felt like, doing this full time would be something that, yeah, that I wanted to do. And so I gave up architecture, went back to the States, studied at seminary, to come back then and work, as part of the Presbyterian Church, the ARP in America, in cooperation then with German churches here in Berlin. And during that time, I met my wife, who was also coming to Berlin at the time to work with the same people. We got to meet in South Carolina, though, where she studied at seminary, the same place I did. So our paths crossed briefly before she moved to Berlin. And then later, I joined her about a year and a half later, and we got married. So I've been married now since 2000, 16 years. Easy to do the math. We have twin sons, and we've now helped with three different new churches in the former east part of Berlin, including that youth church that we were at, usually at one place for about 8 years or so is what it ends up to be.
Obviously, there's a lot of really cool stuff and cool aspects to what Jeffrey is saying here. I mean, everybody's story as to how God has brought them from one place to another is a really cool and interesting experience. But the thing I love about it is the fact that the call to be in Berlin, to be part of the rebuilding and to be part of what was going on in that really crazy time in that city happened before God even called him. The other cool thing that I love is the fact that the churches there were actually not only just okay with doubt and skeptics and people who want to challenge them, they actually welcomed them. And they said, we don't care if that's, you know, we want to talk to you. We believe in this so strongly that I don't care how much you doubt. We want to care about you and care for you and show you what we believe is actually true and what we believe is legit. I love that that's part of his story, especially because of so much of what we do in our ministry. And, it's really cool just to see as he kind of, as he obviously just broad-stroked everything, you know, he covered a whole lot of years in this breakdown of his background. But even so, you can just see how God's moving in every little piece of it. It's even just really entertaining to me the fact that he met his soon-to-be wife, who was also going to be on Berlin, who was going to be going to Berlin, who was going to be working with the same people he was working with, but they met in South Carolina. Like, come on, man. That's like a bad Christian romance novel waiting to happen. I love it. I love the just amazing part of God clearly piecing this stuff together from word go. It's just cool to see that in somebody's background. The next thing I said is clearly I knew that I was going to be linking the original BGT thread, which when this goes up, I'm going to put it in the show notes so you guys can see that and see what led me to get in touch with Jeff. But I wanted him just to briefly explain just how he came up with the idea of connecting to the refugees through games.
Ever since refugees started fleeing Syria, we really wanted to get involved in some way, but it's very hard when you're at such a great distance away. So really when Angela Merkel opened the door to refugees coming to Germany, we welcomed that, and a lot of Germans did too, and we were happy then to be able to actually get a chance to serve these people and help them out in a real personal way, rather than just sending money to a help organization. So that was really the beginning. And at the start, though, it was difficult to find the refugees. They weren't always in places that were very near us in Berlin. So we had to do some research, and then we did find a place that we could help serve as with our church. We started a kids club. I made some homemade games, kind of like crokinole boards and things like that for them to play with. And that's kind of, you know, with kids, the great ways to reach out to them are through music, crafts, and games. And so I was kind of the game guy, since that's one of my interests. So that's how it kind of started. Then as more refugees started coming in, they actually opened up an emergency shelter in a school gymnasium just down the street from our house and right around the corner from our church. So that was very exciting because then that gave us even more opportunities to serve people that were literally right in our neighborhood. So really loving our neighbor, literally. And it was great because there was a real outpouring of help and volunteers from the whole neighborhood. So it actually gave us a great opportunity to network and do things together side by side with all of the people in our neighborhood. So we actually got to know our neighbors even better by working together with them to serve the refugees that were here. So that was very exciting, and there are a lot of benefits that came out of that. You kind of wonder sometimes, you know, what you could accomplish if everybody worked together this closely all the time for your neighborhood. And because there were so many volunteers and there were so many things being offered, when I was over there to help serving food, I asked one of the leaders there, what were some of the needs that weren't being filled and how could I help out with that? And one of the things she said was that there weren't a lot of programs for the men that were there. There was a lot of stuff for the women and children because a lot of the volunteers were women, and there weren't a lot of things for the men. And so I said, well, what about games, you know, and maybe I can bring a chessboard and some different things like that. And she said, that'd be great. And so I started showing up with my chess set and backgammon and a few games that I thought they'd know. And of course, I brought a few Euro games too in case they wanted to learn something new. But most of the time, they wanted to play something they already knew. And besides that, most of them didn't speak much English, if any, and no German. So we had to communicate using sign language. So if we were playing chess, the rules to chess are pretty universal. There's not very many variations in that. And so that was an immediate international language for us to communicate over. And I even, when I brought the chess set and several of the men came over to play with me, I said, well, you guys can play against each other if you want. You don't have to play, you know, against me. But they all wanted to play against me. They knew each other better, and they wanted to connect with me just as much as I wanted to connect with them. So chess, I sort of brushed off my chess set because I hadn't played chess in a long, long time. And it was kind of fun for me to kind of rediscover the beauty of this amazing game as well, after playing all these Euros for so many years and designing Euro games. It was kind of exciting to be able to play chess again, and especially as use it really as a connection, a bridge, a language, which of course I use games all the time for. So that really became my main way of reaching the refugees, building bridges with them, and then also building bridges to the other volunteers and people in my community. And then, of course, I invited too many of my gamer friends to join me, and sometimes they would come and help out as well. So it really got them involved also in connecting with refugees through playing games, since that was something that was not out of their comfort zone, you know, because going into one of these places really does kind of put you out of your comfort zone. But then if you're doing something that you love, like playing games, that's a good way to kind of break the ice and also make my friends feel more comfortable.
The couple things that stood out to me in this response were, obviously there were themes that were underlying everything. You can't listen to this response and not hear things like community and comfort and just that notion of really getting to know people and connect with them. The thing that really stuck out to me was just, you just kind of blow past it, but it really hit me is the idea of just showing up and saying, what needs to be done? Like, he knew that God wanted him to do something here. He knew that he had a place in this ministry, but he had no idea what it was. And so he basically just walked up to the people and said, what do you need me to do? And then he was willing to step into that. And I just think that it's such a simple thing, but I think it's so crucial just to doing any kind of ministry, let alone what he's doing right now. So I just think that was a cool part of the response. The next question we asked was basically just to describe the impact he's seeing, just the response he's getting when playing with the other people, and to really just ask, how does playing games with these guys, you know, uplift them and impact them on a daily basis?
I think it's a welcome distraction from some of the troubles of, you know, living in a gymnasium for many months. for having to go through the difficult process, waiting in line for days to try to get registered and all that stuff. Also, it was a very difficult journey to get to Germany. That's why a lot of times the men came alone and left their families back home, which, of course, is also a big thing on their minds and hearts, is trying to get their families to be able to come. Because it was just too dangerous to bring them all with them. And we've heard some harrowing stories of the trips that they made across the water there to Greece. And so I think it's a good distraction for them, and it's good for them to, encouraging for them to know that somebody cares about them too, and not just the women and children that have made it. And it's just a great bonding thing. I think guys bond a lot of times over sports and games and competitiveness and things like that. So I think it's a good opportunity to bond. It's also been a great way just to start deeper relationships with people. There's a man who I played chess with at first at one of the temporary shelters in the school gym, and I helped him and his wife move to a different place where they had their own room. And since I've really gotten to know them, just through going over there, visiting them, helping them out with various things, occasionally playing games of chess again. And it's been a great relationship that started, through the game. And so it's uplifting not only for them, but it's also uplifting for me. It really is a two-way street, and we're all benefiting through it.
I know it seems obvious to say this, but I have no frame of reference for what these folks are going through. I've never felt that kind of pain. I've never had to endure the kind of stuff they've had to endure. But in a way, I do understand this idea that these guys are just looking for a way to connect and be normal, to continue to look for the things that they always look for, the simple experiences, and to build those relationships. And I love what Jeffrey was saying in here about just the way he's connecting with these people just in that moment of humanity, in that simple stuff that allows him to make that connection. And then from that point, once that connection's been made, to go deeper and to explore what else is going on there. And I just think that that's so powerful. I'm going to shut up now, because I just think that that is such a beautiful image that I don't need to explain that further. The next question that we asked was interesting, and I'll get into more of why it was interesting later when after you've heard from him, but I simply asked the question, have you had any difficulties trying to set things up, trying to make this happen, and asked him if there's been any hesitation or resistance that he's received, or has the event been well received and there is no problems?
Well, chess has definitely been a great way to reach a lot of them, because it's something that they already know, and they're not always willing to learn something new. So I think, there's sometimes it's a challenge to teach them something new. And obviously, I'm not going to force any new games on them. I bring new games because I think it might be appeal to some of the people, especially those who don't like chess. And I've had some success with some of those games. So that's one of the challenges is getting people to play games that maybe don't like games or don't like chess, and they maybe assume that all games are like chess. So the children are a little bit more open to that. I started a game cafe, and to maybe because I thought it might be nice for them to get out of the gymnasium instead of me always going over there, just to get them a break. And that went over really well for a few weeks, but it just kind of dwindled down, and eventually people stopped showing up again. So that was also a challenge. But it's just one of those things that I'm doing trial and error things all the time in our ministry. And some things work really well, some things don't. Some things work for a while and then don't anymore. And some things don't work, and then later on they work. So it's just that's just the nature of any kind of ministry to any kind of people is that you just try things and see what works. So I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest success, has just been going where they are and doing things with them where they are.
The reason I kind of set this question up as it's very interesting to me was not anything necessarily to do exactly with his response, but what wasn't in his response. And I know for a fact that if Jeffrey's listening to this, because he sent me an email after he got us all the responses and said, if there's any follow-up that you want me to do, just email me. And I didn't. I loved all his responses, so I didn't even bother. The thing was that I really thought was really interesting here was is that when I created this question, I was looking from the perspective of what we do here and what we've seen specifically trying to get these things happening in churches and what we've heard from other people. And I was going off the idea of was there any difficulties from the churches trying to see the value in particularly using games to do this, because that's just my go-to. It's the I know there's probably going to be at least a collection of people within the church body that says this is silliness or frivolity. And so the fact that he didn't even register that speaks volumes to me, that these guys are like, no, if this is connecting, that's good. That's all we need. You need to be there. I think everybody can resonate with the fact that we want to play games that we know, that trying new stuff can be weird and you don't necessarily want to do it. You want to go back to what you know already. And I just thought that was fascinating, that the thing that drove me to ask the question is so not even on his radar. So Jeffrey, if you're listening, don't worry. I don't need, that follow up. If you want, you can leave a comment on this, on the episode of the podcast, but I love the fact that wasn't even on your radar, that's not even kind of an issue. That's beautiful to me. The next question is simply, we just wanted to know what games work the best. He's dealing with, people who are just kind of upended and completely just, out of their element and don't know what's going on. And here he is showing up with games, and we know what works the best. You're dealing with a language barrier. You're dealing with a cultural barrier. Just what works, and how does he overcome the issues of just the nature of what he's doing?
Like I said, the best game that works is chess, because everybody knows chess pretty much worldwide. So there's no language barrier to chess. There's also other games that work because you can explain them without using language by just showing. Like there's Hey, That's My Fish is a game that was co-designed by a friend of mine here in Berlin, Günther Kornett. And it's a great game. It looks cute too with the little penguins. So families and children aren't put off by it, but it's also strategic, and it's also it's very easy to understand. You can pretty much demonstrate the rules by showing the people. And so I've used that quite a bit. Otherwise, I've also been open to learning new games from them. Like I've learned what's known on the internet, at least, as Turkish checkers. I learned that from some guys who grabbed one of my chess boards and started playing a game that was not at all chess. they were moving all the pieces the same way, and they were capturing, though, orthogonally rather than diagonally, like in American checkers. So I just watched that and learned from them how to play that, and kind of by trial and error, challenged them to play their game, and just kind of every time I made a move, I had to look and say, okay, is that kind of raise my eyebrow. Is that right? No, that's not right. Okay. So it was also a really good example of what they go through in their normal life, is that I was kind of trying to figure out all the rules to this game without knowing the game. And that's exactly what their life is. They're trying to learn the rules of this culture without speaking the language, without being able to know ahead of time what they are. Other games that work are just about any kind of dexterity game, of course. Like I said, I played Crokinole, and it's very easy just to make your own homemade Crokinole board with an extra board, drill a hole in the center, write, draw some concentric circles. And I decided to make one using bottle caps, because bottle caps are easily replaced. That's one of the problems of donating games to some of these refugee camps, is the pieces go missing very quickly. And so I thought, well, if I make it out of pieces that can be easily replaced, by the kitchen that's there, then people can still play the game. It won't be ruined if the pieces go missing. And so I've done that. I've made some games for them using bottle caps as pieces, and of course dexterity games like Crokinole are self-explanatory. And everybody loves coming over and trying it a few times, so you're not locked into a long game. You can try it a few times and then go off and do something else. And the kids love it. It's very action-oriented, and pretty soon they're flicking the bottle caps all over the place. That those games work really well, but yeah, I've tried to introduce a few others that people have sent me, and there's been also one set of games that a game designer in Germany designed specifically for the refugees, and he included directions in I think 5 or 6 different languages that are common among the refugees. So I've used that several times too, and played some of those games with him.
Naturally, one thing that caught my attention in this whole thing was the fact that a game designer designed a game specifically for the refugees. And not only did they design a game for the refugees, they put it in a bunch of different languages to make sure that the people there, no matter where they're from, no matter what the language they speak, that they would be able to learn it and to be able to play it together. I think that's awesome. And I know for a fact that there's at least a couple designers who listen to us. And if you haven't thought about doing something like that, I really think that that would be just a really, really cool way to directly minister to people through what you're doing and through the work that you do. And I think that would be amazing. Like, I know that a lot of the translation work that happens in these games happen, other people handle that, the game distributors handle that, but just putting that out there into the world that there are games that designed specifically to minister to the needs of these people, obviously not necessarily the religious aspect of minister, but minister to the physical needs and the emotional needs of the people that are in the situation, that is such a cool concept to me. But there's a lot in this response that really kind of spoke to me, the idea of learning their game and, you know, playing what they need. And even one thing that completely caught me off guard was just the idea that this is a refugee camp and stuff goes missing and stuff wanders off. So going in planning on how to allow them to just make the pieces out of whatever. Like, I just spent so much time talking about how great the components are for Mechs vs. Minions. And yeah, we spend a lot of time in the reviews that you hear, like over here, just talking about how important component quality is. And at this point, it gets just to the point where you just want something to play with. And that concept does not get lost in me as I got this response. The next question has to do with the stories that he hears. We've already kind of briefly broad stroke touched on this with some other responses, but I basically said, you deal with absolute horror stories sometimes. These people are coming from all sorts of stuff. These people are coming from war and death and running for your life, and sometimes just in the middle of the night, just running with just the clothes on your back. And I asked him, I said, how do you process that? How do you debrief in the face of all this pain and really just get to the joy, the simple joy that you're offering? Like, how do you even get there in the face of all this kind of hurt?
It's hard to separate really the stories from the people. And I think, you know, the chess and other games gives people the opportunity to share their stories. Obviously, it's a little bit ironic because chess is a war simulation, even though it's very, very abstract. But sometimes I can't help but look at the abstracted pieces and the board and see the destruction, you know, of that real war causes, and see the actual casualties when the pieces are put on the side of the board when they're taken. I don't know if my friends do that when they play against me, but I certainly see it as I look across the board to them. But it's also, it's important, I think, to be able to give them the dignity and respect to listen to their stories. That's something they appreciate very, very much. Being able to tell their stories, knowing that somebody's interested, knowing somebody that cares enough. And so that's something that I think, again, you know, just having a board game as an excuse to get together, to sit down together, and then to have a lot of time to, you know, of course, they're very hospitable people too. So they'll always, you know, my friends will always go back into their room, get some coffee and cookies and cakes and tea and whatever, and bring it back over. And So there's, it's just, you know, again, it's all just part of the small part of the experience of community in their eyes as well. And so I think it's just being able to process it together, I think, is really the key. But of course, I debrief in a sense with my wife and with my friends here.
You know, a lot of times when I'm talking about what we do at En-ROADS, I say that board games aren't the ministry, they're the medium by which the ministry happens. And here, Jeffrey so encapsulates that concept that the stories cannot be separated from the people, and just being there playing the game is an excuse and a location, really, for the hearing of their stories and the learning of who they are as people. I love the idea that even though these folks have so little right now and they're dealing with so much, they're still like going back and getting something for him. You know, so many times, you know, you hear stories about people going and working and being part of this refugee experience. And there's almost this chance that we want to write ourselves in as the heroes, like we're stepping into these people who have nothing and we're bringing them hope. And they're like, dude, these folks just want to hang out and to get to know you and to give, you know, the cookie. I love the idea of the going back and finding the cookies just to offer something, because that's what you do. That's hospitality. That's who they are. I love that. And as a guy who often will, I was just talking about it earlier today, actually, with a friend of mine, that I exegete board games. I exegete the meaning and the grander purpose from what we're seeing on the board and what we're seeing in the movements and the choices we make. And the idea of looking at chess, which we often glance over the fact that it's an abstraction of war. And I think it's fascinating that he's the one making this connection, and he's not sure if the other people do or not. And who knows if they are. I know, you know, that whole aspect of chess, I often completely forget about the fact that we're moving, you know, soldiers around the board. But it's just a really fascinating discussion and understanding of how this thing plays out. Like, he's moving pieces in a simulation of war as he's hearing the responses of people dealing with war. And that it's crazy. I can't even fathom what those debriefs with what his wife and his friends, what that must be like. Cause I just imagine these long pauses and just deep sighs of like, wow. So we heard that today. It's just crazy to me that this is part of his day to day. There's something that I always do to people when they go on trips, when they are part of these kind of experiences. It's funny because there are youth group kids that, even though I'm not in the youth group, I still do this to them every time they come back from like a mission trip or something. I practically corner them and I said, if you can only tell me one story that kind of is the tip of everything, it's the epitome of the trip, what is it? Because I like making people think about that and to really try to break down the experience into one very tangible, very real moment. And so I asked Jeffrey to do that. And as hard as it was, I really liked the response he gave.
I've already told a little bit about kind of some of the stories of some of the experiences I've had, and especially how board games are kind of an allegory for the things that are actually happening in the lives of some of these refugees. Also that, you know, I really feel like integration is a two-way street, and that it's an opportunity for me to learn too. And so I always go into that, into meeting new people with that attitude of, hey, I want to learn from you. And so I always ask them, what kind of games do you like? Is there a game you can teach me? And one of those guys started just telling me all about his favorite card game called Trex. And it's a compendium card game, which means you play several rounds, and each round you play a different sort of mini game. Most of them are trick-taking games, and the dealer gets to decide which game he wants to play at that particular time because of his hands, judging from his hand. And so it was just it sounded like a real fascinating game, one that takes a long time and you need exactly four players for it. So we weren't able to play it at that time because it was just me and him. But it was just really interesting to hear him excitedly tell me about this game of his. And the reason he was so excited about it, too, was that it brought back memories of the family and friends who had taught the game to him, where he had played it back home. So telling me about this game was like his way of going home again. And through that, he was telling me about his home. So that was very, very touching, and just a very touching experience to be able to just share with him and also kind of help him process his homesickness and all those friends and family who he left behind.
Well, before I get into any kind of deep reflection about this response, the first thing I want to say is I want to learn this game too. Like, this sounds awesome. I love the idea of the dealer deciding which version of the game you're playing based on the cards that they have in their hand. Like, there's so many awesome things that could come from that. Like, the idea just of the fact that there are multiple games within the one game. Like, I want to know how this is played. Like, this will be one other time when I go, Jeffrey, if you're listening, I want to learn this game. I want to know how this is played because it just sounds so cool, and it's something simple that you could probably, I'm guessing, play with just a simple deck of cards. That sounds so interesting and so cool, and I think I'd have a blast playing it. The other part of this that I absolutely love is just that idea that the simple act of playing somebody else's favorite game is the connection reminding him of home, reminding him of the stuff that he left behind, reminding him of good times and nostalgia. Like, we always give, you know, Daniel a little bit of a hard time because he's talking about HeroQuest. He just, in the tavern recently, he was talking about how he just probably spent too much money on a copy of HeroQuest. And I do the same thing. I gob over my copy because of the fact that the game is fine. The game is great. But the quality of the game is not why we get so excited about HeroQuest. It's because of the fact that it reminds us of our childhood playing the game with the people that we love and the people that we care about. And so it just lends itself to that idea of universality. Like, all of us want to remember those good times we had playing back home with our family and our friends. And in this simple moment, you have that. You just have that, this absolutely perfect moment where that's exactly what's getting felt. So, kind of winding down the questions, there's a couple more, but kind of winding down at this point, I asked him simply to just say, how would he encourage somebody else who might be thinking about using games they love to impact other people? Like, obviously, that's what we do here, is that we try to get people to do that. But he has a very specific insight into ways to do that. And we just wanted to get his opinion on that.
When I got into the board gaming hobby about 15 years ago and discovered German games here in Berlin, there was really two things that really appealed to me. The one was kind of exploring all these new mechanics and ways that the game worked. And that's kind of the architect in me. And that's why I became a game designer, was to create games and try to explore new ways of doing them. And then there's the other part of it, that's the social aspect that I really love, is really getting together with a real diverse group of people around a table and having an instant connection, because you're all in this imaginary world that's clearly defined by these rules. And that's the thing, is that a lot of my game groups that I've started too, when we advertise on meetup.com and things like that, you get a real diverse group of people. I mean, people from all over the world. And that have come to Berlin and are looking for connection, and they see board games, and a lot of them are interested in playing board games with each other, and mostly, though, to get to know other young people who have just moved to Berlin. So my favorite times of those open game nights are actually afterwards, when we get together to, you know, some of us go out to eat or hang around and just talk without the board and the cards between us. Then you get on, you very naturally start talking about all sorts of things, about the meaning of life, about
politics, religion, God, family, children, everything. And so it's just, it's a great icebreaker. It's a great connector and bridge builder between all sorts of different kinds of people, and a great starting point to deeper relationships.
Yeah, I got nothing I can add to that. That's just perfect. So, yeah, we're going to move on to the next one. And basically, the last question that we posed to him was pretty much just asking how we can help, how people, I know some of our listeners are in Germany, so if you're in Germany, how they can help, and really just how the regulars, you know, no matter where we are, how we can help, either just help the refugees or even help specifically help him and what he's doing.
The biggest thing really is if there are refugees anywhere near you, then I just encourage you to take the time and step out of your comfort zone and go visit them and serve them if you can. Maybe even play some games with them. Give them the dignity of listening to their stories. That's just so important because the volunteer movement is so important here in Germany to making it successful. The refugee situation would be a catastrophe without it. I mean, it's already been reported, you know, long lines waiting to register. It's not been the best organized effort from the government side of things, but it's amazing what local residents have done to organize, especially in Berlin neighborhoods where the refugees can be easily integrated. And so that's something that I think is really important. You know, there's Germans who have adopted families so that people have that personal contact with another family, a German family that they can always go to in need or with questions. And so those kind of things are really important to do. So if there's a possibility of doing that, do that. I fully recommend it, and you will be enriched as much as they are. I can promise you that. So, and the other thing, you know, as far as what we're doing here, you know, I think it's possible if you're really interested in working with refugees, it's possible to maybe do some kind of an internship with us or with some other organization who's working here. But if you can't do that, the other thing you can do is pray. I believe in the power of prayer. I believe that God answers prayer. And it's also a very difficult time right now because the refugees now have been here. A lot of them have been here a year now. The refugee effort has been going on for at least that amount of time. And people are starting to get a little tired of doing it. It was exciting at first, but it does drain on you. And the refugees themselves are less motivated to do things because they're going through a little bit of depression and just despair of having to continue to wait, continue to be put on hold with German lessons or with getting a job application or even getting their asylum approved. So there's just all sorts of challenges right now. And so we just, we'd be happy if you prayed for us and for the other workers here, that we would have perseverance, that we would continue to be able to have energy to love these people and help them, that you would also pray for the refugees themselves, that you know, they come from very traumatic experiences, and a lot of them are questioning, you know, all the values that they learned before, and it's a chance for them to get to know God in a new way here. And of course, we want to be able to show them the love of Jesus through everything that we do and say. And so just keep us in your prayers and keep them in your prayers. And any encouraging notes you want to write, of course, I'd be happy to hear it. And we can, if you'd like to hear more about what we're doing, we'd be happy to put you on a mailing list of what updates on what's going on here in Berlin with the refugees. So thank you very much.
You know, one thing we often get wrong, and I'm just as guilty, if not even more guilty than a lot of people, is that we want to do something. When we ask how we can help, we want to be able to do, we want to be able to give, we want to be able to point to something very tangible and say, I did this, I participated in this. But so often, the best way we can help is to bring that before God and let Him handle it. That doesn't mean to not do anything helpful. If you know of refugees in your area, just like Jeffrey said, just go out and be with them and serve them and do what you can there. But a lot of times we disregard the power of prayer. Like, prayer is what we do when there's nothing else, but there really is a lot of power there. There's a lot of just wonderful experiences for you, for them, and just to be participating in what God is doing rather than us do it, is to participate in what God's doing, because only He can really move people. One thing that really kind of gave me a little bit of a gut punch is, you know, we've been talking about refugees for a while now, and granted, the news cycles, you know, rise and fall, but this has been in the news for a while, that we've been dealing with this for a while. And I imagine that even before people started showing up on our shores, they were showing up in Europe because it's a shorter trip and they would be going through Europe to get to us, even if they were going to end up here. So I can definitely understand that part where he's just like people are getting tired. Like, you can only work so hard for so long before it starts to drain. And so I do think we need to be praying not only for the refugees, we should especially be praying for the refugees, but also for the people that are doing the work supporting these refugees, because it's hard, because this kind of process is supposed to take such a short amount of time, and it never is a short amount of time. People are dealing with this stuff for years. To the point where a lot of people in refugee situations are just trying to move in, because there's no reason not to set up roots, because you're going to be there. Even if everything gets processed, you're going to be there for a long, long time. So I think that it's incredibly powerful. And, I know Jeffrey is on Facebook. I think I added him into the tavern. Definitely can contact him there. If you want to email me and say, you know, hey, like, I'm never a person who randomly puts other people's emails out into the world. But if you email me at mike@inroadsministries.com, if you want to email Jeffrey, I would gladly forward that on to him. Because, yeah, I think it's important that we support our brothers and sisters all over the world who are doing really cool things, especially when it's so close to the ministry that we love. I said that this last question was the last one that we posed, and that's true. We sent him the 9 questions and didn't expect anything else. He actually threw in a bonus, which I think, in light of what so many people are dealing with now and what people are thinking about now, I definitely want to add it in here. He threw in a bonus response, just that in relationship to what people have been asking him. Because we're not the only people who interviewed him. We're not the only people who are interested in what he's doing. But he threw in a bonus about the idea of safety. And in light of all the craziness, in light of the terrorist stuff that's happening, in light of the worries that refugees are going to be, you know, endangering us and things like that, security apparently is a big question that people have for him. And I'm just going to let him talk about what that's like and what part of what he does is in relationship to that.
Many people have been asking me about problems, cultural problems with the refugees, how they view women, or also Islamic terrorism and the dangers. And the main thing, I think, is that I've never felt in danger here. And I've been in 5 different refugee centers, refugee homes, and I've never felt like I was in danger. There are some reports of some Christian refugees being persecuted by Muslim refugees if they're not taking part in Ramadan at the same time and so on. But events especially like what happened in New Year's Eve in Cologne and a couple of the attacks that have happened in southern Germany are very isolated incidents and not at all representative of most of the refugees. In fact, they're just as appalled as we are, and if not more so, because it affects them more. Because obviously things like that hurt their chances of being accepted here and being able to start a new life here. So most of them are very tolerant of different worldviews. And, I've been very open about mine. I've been very open about being a Christian and even had theological conversations with many of my Muslim friends. And so I've never felt in danger for doing that. And they've been very respectful. So it's just, again, you can't necessarily form an opinion just on a few isolated news stories. It would be like if I was an African American and would be extremely afraid right now of going to America because every African American is getting shot by police officers right now. But that's the news that's on TV here in Europe. So if I were to take that as the only news and the only thing that's happening, then I could also go to that extreme. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing right now is in America and other places. They're looking at the news and they see, you know, some of these shocking stories and they think, oh, that's the way it is everywhere. And you hear political candidates talking about how Germany's being overrun and all that stuff. And that's just not happening. That's not happening at all here. And there's no reason to be more afraid than you normally would. I mean, the chances of things like that happening are probably about the same as they always were.
Naturally, we want to thank Jeffrey for giving us these responses and taking time out of a very busy schedule to make this happen and connect with us. Again, if you want to get in touch with Jeffrey, you can probably find him on Facebook, possibly in the tavern. You can definitely email me at mike@inroadsministries.com. I would be happy to forward him any emails that you want to send. You can also comment on the post on the Game Store Prophets website, and I'm sure he'll possibly be able to see it there as well. I've spent a lot of time giving the news of the day, so I'm not going to worry about putting that here. There's been so much stuff. I remember when I started talking about the guys that I was going to do this episode, I'm like, I hope that we'll be able to fill the usual hour so this isn't just a random bonus episode. And here I am 20 minutes over schedule. Thank you guys for just bearing with me. There was so much to talk about and so much to get in. I think, at least I hope, that you agree with me and that you're willing to deal with a little bit of a longer episode because of this amazing opportunity to hear from what Jeffrey's doing over there. Again, I will put the thread to that on BoardGameGeek. Definitely check that out. Guys, I'm just going to leave it at this point. Apparently, I was rolling all sorts of ones on podcasting today. But always remember, folks, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.